Okay, we're back. Y'all know Blink from BlinkOnCrime.com, our sister blogger. Good evening, ma'am. Hello? Maybe I lost her. Are you with me?
I'm with you, Dana.
Okay. You must be, you're having bad weather there, right?
I am. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's because you're kind of cutting in and out a little bit. But we'll try this for a little bit and see how it goes.
Tell me if I need to move around or...
No.
And don't make me, like, do handstands and stuff.
No, no, I just interviewed Bobby Brown, you know, from Dog the Bounty Hunter, the bail bondsman.
I heard.
Yeah, and I said that if anybody ever needs, if you ever need a bail bondsman, I'll get Bobby for you. So just thought I...
I hope that I won't, but okay.
Just thought I would let you know. Anyway, let's talk about Isabel Celis. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, well, Celis. Well, depends on your background.
I'm Canadian. This is the best I can do. You've got breaking news. Lots of go to blinkoncrime.com. Lots of information. Blood in the bedroom. Police are looking at family and possibly a neighbor. Let's talk about that. What's going on?
They are. This tiny little girl, this 6-year-old Isabel Celis, was apparently abducted or allegedly abducted from her bedroom out of the window on the evening of April 20th. Early morning hours of April 21st. And obviously much of the country is speculating and looking at the case, of course, and she has not been found or located, and here we are, you know, at the end of May, approaching June. And as we know, you know, statistically speaking, you have a vast amount of experts that are on your show and that you know that will tell you, you know, 9 times out of 10, a case like this is coming from a family member, extended family member, or somebody inside the home that has access to the child or access to the home.
Yep.
That certainly might be, but in what is in somewhat of a rare development, you know, if you juxtapose this case with the case of Kaylee Anthony, much of the discovery came out late Friday afternoon, over 550 pages that are talking about and are chronicling the investigative, you know, efforts of the Tucson Police Department and the Pima County Sheriff's Office, you know, the FBI, as well as the U.S. Marshals. And what it shows is certainly there is intense scrutiny, you know, involving Rebecca Celis and Sergio Celis, who are Isa's parents, but not just that. It is the extended family members, and we see a window to what seems to be kind of the gloss over of a neighbor.
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. You're right. The statistics show that it's a family member or someone close by. I forget even they've broken down the statistics. Let's talk about the neighbor.
There was a neighbor, a gentleman by the name of Nathan Patrick McDonald, who is a few houses down, who when... authorities, police officers were chronicled, or I'm sorry, they were tasked with doing the canvas, the walk and talk or the talk and knock, you know, however you want to say it, up the street, which was, by the way, really quickly after, you know, a be on the lookout was put out there for Isabel. I mean, in terms of other cases, we're talking minutes as opposed to, you know, an Amber Alert, mm-hmm. which was never, this case actually never qualified for an Amber Alert, but I have to be honest with you. In terms of the neighborhood, I have not seen a more massive effort in this amount of time for a small child that has been declared missing in, you know, years. Mm-hmm. What happened was... officers were dispatched to do the walk and talk, and literally four houses down, they approach a home which is owned jointly by tenancy with a woman by the name of Alicia Gregory and also Nathan McDonald. What was happening simultaneously, if you will, or after the fact, depending upon, you know, what redacted or non-redacted documents you tend to believe, is that an officer who was tasked with letting Isabel's coaches and playmates know where her baseball game was scheduled that morning, to let them know that she was missing, and of course to observe, you know, potentially, could she have been there? You know, did she not necessarily go out her window? And, you know, is there some other story that would support her being okay? At which time, this officer observes Mr. McDonald, who clearly is not at home, coming out of the south side of the Wilshire Park after observing his green Jetta GLS vehicle on the north side of East 14th Street and watching the gentleman cross the park through the midside with a large mag light, you know, large flashlight, which is mostly standard issue. Of course, you know. Do you have one, Dana?
I've got a couple of them, yep.
Exactly. What was interesting was this gentleman, when he was met by the officer, stated, and this is, by the way, about 10 a.m. to 10:15 a.m. So technically speaking, at this time, could, you know, his co-owner of the home and partner have called him at some other location and said, by the way, there's a, you know, the little girl's missing down the street, could you go look? Is that a possibility? Yes, I assume it is. I assume since a warrant was issued literally at the same time that a warrant was issued at the Celis residence, I'm thinking there's probably more that we don't know.
Okay.
What is important is that this gentleman claims to the officer and says, you know, I know about the missing girl, and I was looking at washes, you know, north and south of this, and also, you know, individual tunnels. The tunnels, by the way, are located underneath the mall, which is about a mile, you know, northeast and within walking distance of his residence. So it's kind of, there's no way you're going to justify whether or not the time frame would say that he would even have known.
Right.
About Issa's disappearance by that time. By this time, he's walking literally within 50 yards of what is to be discovered under an hour later with a bed sheet, a bed skirt, and a bag of clothing, which is directly south of an area that he proclaimed to have searched to the officer when he was confronted at his vehicle at about 10:30 a.m. At 11:30, that area is secured. It all corresponds, Dana. I don't know if this gentleman has an interest in Issa's disappearance, but I can tell you this, on a map, and as I included on my site in that picture, it's extremely compelling evidence or, you know, a schematic, if you will, that this gentleman is seen sitting on, you know, electric boxes at 9 a.m. and asked to leave by a resident within walking distance of the location of the washes where evidence is found and collected, and then he enters a park where an officer locates him, and there is significant contact with incident command before he's even approached. And a warrant ensues immediately.
Yep.
That evening, on a Saturday evening.
What about forensics?
Well, there are some forensics back. In particular, if you're talking about Mr. McDonald, what I know is that there were several items that were photographed from his home. One was a shotgun. One was a firearm. I believe it was described as a pistol. And by the way, I'm referring to publicly available documents and, you know, law enforcement officers' reports. So I don't have the specific, you know, the drill down, if you will, of forensics like we usually get in a case like this that we work on privately.
Sure.
But there was also the clothing that might match, and I say might match, Isabel, which was a dark blue pair of shorts. And I'm telling you, what I've posted so far this evening, as you know, we've had some weather issues, so we're going to part two tomorrow, but there's a bunch of stuff that compels us to think that very quickly there is concern that, you know, Isabel is not living.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. How about the forensics from the home itself?
Surprisingly, and again, we're relegated to what is publicly available. If I were to assess a crime scene, I'm not seeing the abundance of evidence that we might expect to see forensically if that were where a crime occurred. We know potentially that this might have been an abduction, and that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the strongest piece of evidence right now coming out of the home is obviously blood. And it was categorized as quote-unquote obvious blood on the floor of Isabel's bedroom. There was also blood, which tested positive for blood, on the driver's side of her father, Sergio Celis, driver's side of his car on the seat. We don't know if that has been impounded. I have no evidence to think that it has. I believe that what had happened is most other evidence has been tested and discounted outside of the regular collection activity for forensics, meaning there's no, you know, evidence of decomposition or, you know, a decedent, things along those lines that would make somebody, you know, impound a car or things along those lines. Another interesting piece of evidence is that within the residence, when I say within, I'm referring to the southeast and south perimeter of the fence. I'm not sure that if you've actually seen this residence, Dana, but it looks like a, you know, I described it as a mini Alamo compound.
Okay.
Very large fence work around. There are three canines that are inside and outside dogs, and outside, which was noticed quickly, and by the way, corresponds to what I mentioned earlier, Nathan McDonald's home. There are footprints that are on top of a green electrical box, again on top of a gray or other colored gas venue or internment, and then we have the corresponding gentleman who believes and approaches the police officer that Nate McDonald had spoken to, saying that individual was sitting on an electric box behind my home between 9 a.m. and 9:30 a.m. There are those prints, and taken from the home of Mr. McDonald was also a footprint which resulted in what's called a gel. You know how they used to do plaster casts?
Sure.
Okay. Today they do what's more of a see-through gel material, almost like if you were to purchase, you know, a gel insert, you know, for your shoes or running sneakers or things along those lines. It's very similar. That actually was taken from the home of Mr. McDonald after the fact. While I don't know if that's, you know, criminally relevant, it certainly is compelling.
It's interesting, for sure. There's some talk about Child Protective Services taking the other children out of the home. Update us on that.
Right now, there is a standing voluntary order that Sergio Celis agreed to. It's not known publicly why that he would enter into an agreement like that, but we do know that late in 2011, there was some sort of interaction between Child Protective Services and the family. So this is not the first time that there has been an interaction. I will say that Sergio Celis' sister has said that that is inaccurate, and Becky Celis has said, you know, Issa's mother has said he is an excellent father, he's an excellent husband, you know, he loved his daughter, he loved our children, you know how that goes.
Right, yep, no, absolutely.
There is a standing order, and to, you know, it's not unusual, I would say, in terms of a, you know, if you contrast this with, say, for instance, Kyron Horman's case, where, I mean, there was a restraining order granted.
Sure, yeah.
Based on a disappearance. I have to say that while I am not aware that there was a particular guardian ad litem granted or appointed for Issa, which I think there should be, I believe that they are interested in the children's best interests, and I support it. I do know that the investigation and the agreement was sought by the detectives in the case investigating Issa's disappearance.
Okay. Blink from Blink on Crime is here for more on this story, part two. Check on Blink on Crime in the next day or so. I want to get an update, too, on the Sierra Lamar murder. You do have an update on your page. Tell my listeners what has gone on there.
Sad. You know, there's a gentleman that has been arrested, and he was arrested based on a DNA link to an additional crime, an earlier crime that was not what I'll call a sexually motivated crime some years earlier. But they believe that he is attached to at least one other, if not two other crimes. There has been no evidence or discussion about how Sierra came into contact with this gentleman. And I'm certain that we'll learn that. But we know that very early on, he has been under surveillance. And the reason for that, in my opinion, it has not been disclosed publicly, is because he was smart enough to turn his cell phone off, and there are no pings associated with, you know, Sierra's location. Mm-hmm. But for, you know, police to come out and say that she's deceased without any supporting evidence of that, and they've said that. There's no blood, there's no this. I happen to have an inside source which makes me believe that it's possible that Sierra was the victim of a stun gun attack based on the belongings that were found of hers, to be confirmed hers, very quickly on the side of the road that were discarded, neatly folded. I'm talking about the clothing that they believe that she was last in. And that evidence would be synonymous with what I'll call a violent assault, without giving too much away.
Okay.
This guy was a worker at Safeway, closely located to the residence, but again, there has been no disclosure as to how Sierra came in contact with this individual. It's my I've actually heard them say she didn't know him. I personally think at the end of this case, there will be an association, whether it was her going into, you know, the store and purchasing something in her, you know, daily activities. I don't believe that this individual was a complete stranger to her. I don't think she's getting in a car with a complete stranger or any of that. I just don't think that happened. Her remains, as you know, has not been recovered.
Yeah.
And this individual is not likely to probably speak about that, because he's being charged with her murder without a body, without, you know, as police are saying, evidence of her death. I personally believe this is going to a grand jury, and they took this individual off the street because they're obligated to, as law enforcement officers, if he, it looks like he's escalating or there's no longer a need, you know, or a lead to Sierra's disappearance. I have to say, law enforcement got this right. I really believe that. I think they did a fantastic job at following the leads, at not rushing to judgment, and surveilling this individual for as long as they did, because the reality is, for a family of a missing person, we want to recover that individual and put them to rest. And that's what, you know, they're not able to do right now, but I think it was absolutely their goal.
And we're talking about Garcia Torres, Antolin, am I saying that right?
Antolin, yes.
Antolin Garcia Torres. And more for to come on that again on blinkoncrime.com. Now, let's just change topics for a quick second. I always like throwing in a surprise to you. Are you a fan of the Lifetime Movie Network?
Oh, I know where you're going with this. No.
Now, they're
capital N, capital O.
Their staff movie star, Rob Lowe, after playing Drew Peterson, is now going to be playing Jeff Ashton in the Casey Anthony movie. Listen, I'm not making fun of the cases themselves are so sad, and we've covered them 1,000 times, but for the love of God, do you think people are going to buy any of this stuff?
Here's what I think. I just got a... Is a brain twister, or there's probably some other name for that?
Yeah.
First of all, Rob Lowe playing Jeff Ashton. Rob Lowe's about 5'8".
Yeah.
Jeff Ashton is about 6'3".
Yep.
Having stood next to him, he's a big dude. A tall gentleman.
Yeah.
I don't even get that, but not for anything. No, I don't. I think it's a testament to how little the value at the end of the day this case has brought to entertainment purposes. It reminds me of wringing out a wash rag.
Yep.
And then at the end, now that it has been wrung, it's just dry and it has no effect.
Yep.
I really... And I'm a victim of this in some ways because, as you and I both know, that is a flagship case. It's so, so, so important to me, and I am reluctant to even write about it.
I know.
Today. And the reason is, this is about a baby. This is about a little girl who did not receive justice. She didn't. That's just the reality. And we are, as advocates, charged with figuring out how to continue advocacy and getting the lesson that we're supposed to learn. That's how I see it. So when I see these, I don't know, what do you want to call it? I call them vaudeville acts of playing it out.
Yep.
It makes no sense to me, and frankly, it's embarrassing. So I don't have any other opinion other than I really would wish that at some point people would focus on what actually happened in this case, and that is, Kaylee Marie Anthony was a 34-month-old little girl whose mother, and I will say this, was not found guilty by a court of law, but whose mother tossed her into a bog, 130 yards in the back area of her home where she rotted for months.
Yep.
What happened.
And these dopey Lifetime movies do nothing for the cases, whether it's Peterson, whether it's Anthony, whatever the next one they're going to do. And people don't watch them. It does nothing to bring out the real story, the real tragedy, the system, the jury system, the prosecution, the Casey Anthony, Drew Peterson. That story is yet still to have a finality to it, if there ever is one. So Blink, we got about 5 minutes left. Then what do we do? How do we get the point across to people that these Lifetime movies or these Hallmark shows or this stuff that's out there, and who knows who Rob Lowe's going to play next, is just probably, maybe based on the story, but most of it's just going to be fantasy.
Dana, that's such an important and fair question, and actually so pertinent to one that was asked to me about a reader the other day. They were, you know, Blank, you were asked about when you're going to talk about some insides that you have into the investigation and things that have gone on in the case. And for me, because you asked me, Dana, is that I agree with you that the message is so important and it has to be told. And it's not good enough for us to point fingers and say they're not telling it.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're commercializing it. And that does not serve the victim in this case.
That's right.
So I think what we have to do is I think we have to decide, for me personally, since you're asking, is how to tell my personal insight and information that went along with this case, because the duty is to say, look, it wasn't tried appropriately. There were mistakes that were made. And regardless of public opinion, we have to really talk about how to do things differently faced in a similar situation so this doesn't happen again. And that is justice for Kaylee Anthony.
Yep.
So what we have to do is figure out the best venue and the best medium to do that and get focused on it, even though, you know, our other casework may lag as a result. I think that's really the issue. I think trying to figure out how to convey the message of advocacy and not commercialize it is difficult when this is such a highly commercial slash toxic, really, case. How do you do that? And I think that takes great thought, and I think it takes great planning. And I want to say that I think we'll get there.
Eventually.
I do. I think she's so, nobody's forgotten about her. It's a punch in the gut. Really?
Yep.
That's what happened. And how do we learn? How do we go from here? Are important messages. And I really respect the public, and I think they care.
Yep.
I think the fact that you're not seeing Jose Baez and, you know, the C word and the Anthonys and all of these, you know, Chaney Mason, you're not seeing all of these people on TV getting paid right now is because people don't want to hear about that. They want to hear about what should have been, maybe. And then one more thing. We have an unresolved issue in this case. So I'm going to put that out there. There is an investigation that relates to Mr. Baez and a witness in this case whose report has not yet been filed, and that is one of a Ms. Laura Buchanan. I would not count that out as incurring charges against somebody in this case.
Well, it'll be interesting to see.
It will.
Yep, it will be for sure. Listen, Blink from Blink on Crime, our sister blogger. Check out her her blog. More information on all these cases that we talk about and more. Always a pleasure, my friend. Be careful. Be safe in that weather you're having there.
It's always my pleasure, Dana. Thank you so much, and be well.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. That's Blink from Blink on Crime. It'd be interesting. Don't get me wrong. Rob Lowe can act in what he wants. The Lifetime Movie Network can put on what they want. You can watch what you want, but really, does it do justice for Kaylee? Does it do justice for the Peterson story? Yeah, I don't know. I'll let you decide. That's it. I'm Dana Pretzer. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.